evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, March 25th, 2024. The spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces says there are no Ugandan troops in South Sudan.
I would like to make it very clear that it is untrue. We do not have foreign troops on our land. The rumors was manufactured and spread by rumors mongers on social media.
And water tanker operators in South Sudan's capital Juba complain about new tariffs forced on them by the government.
The water filling center has increased the prices from 3,500 to now 7,000 South Sudanese pound. Of course, the roads within the residential area are bad, and we are struggling.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces has dismissed rumors making rounds on the social media about the presence of four battalions from the Uganda People's Defense Forces in Juba. General Rule Roy Kwong says the rumors are spread by people whom he called enemies of South Sudan. General Roy says there are no foreign troops stationed in South Sudan.
I would like to make it very clear that it is untrue. We do not have foreign troops on our land. The rumors was manufactured and spread by rumors mongers on social media.
This is not the first time this kind of information is surfacing. In 2013, President Kiir called for help from Uganda, and Ugandan troops were on the ground, specifically in Bor. Why would you deny their presence now?
Well, I'm telling you the correct information that I have here on my desk. Even the deputy spokesperson of UPDF came on air, making it very clear that they did not deploy here in Juba. And I don't see any reason why our people should keep on spreading rumors and believing in such rumors. Yes, it is true there was a deployment of UPDF forces in 2014. It was in 2013, sorry. But it wasn't denied. It was admitted here there were foreign troops on the South Sudanese soil at the invitation of the government. But this time we are saying we have not invited anybody. So maybe it is the charm of 2013 that the mixed people persist on spreading and believing these rumors.
Why did it take you long to clear the air on these rumors?
I did that last week. It is only that it was not picked up by international media outlets. But I did it to a number of local dailies, and I just repeated the same with a local daily today, shortly before you gave me a call. I've been clearing the air. It is only that, these leading international media outlets did not pick it up. I'm sure once it is broadcasted by VOA, and then the air will get much clearer.
There appears to be a lot of misinformation going around the country, specifically about the alleged presence of the UPDF in South Sudan. Of course, you speak for the army, and you're denying that UPDF is not there in South Sudan. Why would someone create such a story?
That would require a psychologist to answer, to know what is in the minds of the people of South Sudan. I'm a man, professional military officer, that state facts when they are facts. And if for some reason, majority of South Sudanese decided to be listening and believing in rumors. And we have a lot of people that do not wish our country good. And the only tool they are using is to spread propaganda on social media. We have freedom of speech. We have different media platforms that are being used by our people, and that's very sad. But we are here to clarify there whenever there is misinformation. But take it from me, a lot of people do not wish good to happen in this country.
There was also another message that has been circulating over the weekend that the chief of staff, that is the head of the South Sudan Army, has given the Ugandan troops in South Sudan 48 hours to leave. Was that coming from the command?
No. That's also another untrue story. To whom was it given, the ultimatum? To the alleged UPDF forces or to whom?
I don't want to give credit to rumor mongers, but this was a message circulating on various WhatsApp forum. that the head of the South Sudan Army is giving Ugandan troops present in Luri 48 hours to leave the country.
There's another unstructured lie.
That's General Lul Roy Kwong, spokesperson of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. He spoke with me from Juba earlier today. A group of political parties in South Sudan have petitioned the Political Parties Council to reconsider the $50,000 registration fee to qualify for this year's elections. The National Democratic Movement accuses the council of commercializing the election process. The head of the Political Parties Council says he has no plans to change the fee. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
Political parties aspiring to run in the scheduled December elections accused the Political Parties Council of charging an exorbitant fee to acquire a provisional license. Gajol Paul, leader of the People's United Forum, says the PPC should go back to the drawing board.
We, the leaders of political parties seeking to register with the PPC in South Sudan, are writing to express our strong rejection of the recent fee increase for provisional registration. We are deeply concerned about the sudden and significant rise from 20,000 SSC to $50,000 for a provisional license imposed by current leadership of the PCC.
Last week, the Political Parties Council announced that political parties who want to participate in the December election must pay $50,000 or the equivalent in South Sudanese pounds to register and qualify for a provisional license. Lamakola Jawin, leader of the National Democratic Party, says the higher fee is a sign that the council wants to prevent some parties from taking part in the polls.
How many parties will afford $50,000? Then another thing about this provisional registration, by the way, it was not there in Sudan, this provisional registration. We put it here in 2012 because the law says a political party which is not registered cannot be involved in political activities. Yeah. So we said, but if you want to go for registration, it is a political activity. How will you do it if you have to wait until I get registered? This is how the idea of provisional registration came about. Now we are developing to another commercial enterprise.
Peter Mayen Majungdit, leader of the People's Liberal Party and head of the opposition coalition known as Other Political Parties, says most people cannot afford the new registration fees.
The Political Parties Council is trying to basically become a business entity rather than an institution that should deliver democracy. An institution that should deliver democracy is an institution that basically look at the average of the standard of living, because most of those who registered in the political parties, these are common men, citizen, middle class, people who are in their daily life in a hard way. The council have to properly come back to its senses because the fee is unreasonable and it is unjustified.
Jamie Sakol, the chairman of the Political Parties Council, says genuine political parties can afford the fees as well as meet other requirements such as registering before the polls.
This is what has been approved in the regulation, the decision passed by the members, and it is in the regulation. I don't think we've got a view of changing it at the moment. They are not parties, there are groups of people who want to register a political party. Those are the requirements for provisional license. Must be adhered to. Why do we need to be dictated by the applicants?
According to the Political Parties Act, a group applying for a provisional license should provide a copy of its constitution, sign a resolution of the first party meeting, official name of the party, the list of names of its leaders, and the party logo, along with payment of the registration fee. President Salva Kiir has openly expressed interest in being the ruling SPLM in government party's flag bearer, the party he controls. Majungdit has said he plans to run in the December elections as a presidential candidate. The SPLM in opposition party, led by the country's first vice president Riek Machar, have repeatedly said that South Sudan is not ready for elections this year. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Still in Juba, the drivers of water tankers in the capital are accusing the government's water corporation for increasing water tariffs at filling centres across the town from £3,500 to 7,000 South Sudanese pounds per trip, forcing drivers to increase prices of water sold to people in residential areas. For VOA News, Viola Elias has more from Juba.
Juba, the capital of South Sudan, is located near the River Nile, but the residents struggle to get clean drinking water. Since South Sudan got its independence in 2011, the majority of households lack running water taps. Water tankers operated by Ethiopians and Eritreans is the main water supply in Juba town. Tama Amarnir, a water tanker driver, says South Sudanese in the outskirts of Juba finds it challenging to access water. He says the demand for water is too high among the residents, but water tankers are not making good profits.
I took 3 trips in the morning and people are still demanding for water. I know people are tired and sometimes water at this filling point finishes before 3 p.m. All these things are difficult. I know that people are suffering because of the situation. Sometimes people ask me to help give them water on credit, and I do, because as much as we sympathize with them, we also need them to help us.
James Emmanuel, another water tank driver, says a drum of water used to cost 800 South Sudanese within Juba and £1,200 outside of Juba, but now a drum of water costs £2,000 in the nearby areas and £3,000 in the far areas. Emmanuel says drivers of water tank face challenges as they supply water across Juba town.
The water filling center has increased the prices from 3,500 to now 7,000 South Sudanese pounds. Of course, the roads within the residential area are bad, and we are struggling. And even there are people who cannot access water because of impassable roads. Sometimes your vehicle breaks down and forces us to pour the water from the tank. Fortunately, during the dry season, the roads are good. But the most difficult time is the rain season. I asked the government officials to maintain the roads, reduce price of fuel and engine oil. We do not have any problem and will immediately reduce the price once everything gets back to normal.
Most small-scale business owners say starting a business in South Sudan can be expensive. James Oluak, another water tank driver, says motor spare parts and the skyrocketing prices in the market has forced water suppliers to increase their prices.
For example, we used to have a problem where one tire cost to 150,000. Now it is 300,000. So drivers do not increase the prices. That means people in this area will not get water, because water tankers will prepare to go and supply water to far areas to get money. So they have accepted to pay £2,000 per drum of water. But of course, many people have not accepted to pay the amount.
Juba resident Santino Albino says it is a challenge to get water, adding that water tankers prefer to take their water to areas far from the city.
Water is very difficult to get here. We have to go to the water filling center to get water from morning to evening. One drum of water costs £2,000, and I am close to the water filling point. Every morning I go to the water station, but I do not get the water. And here I get more than 50 water tankers at the filling point, but only few water tankers are supplying water in our area.
Last month, Yar Paul Kwal, managing director of South Sudan Urban Water Corporation, announced new traffic of 200 South Sudan pounds per a drum of water. Kwal says the cost of operating water tank is very challenging. Kur Abraham is the manager at the Gudele Block 9 water filling station. Abraham says he and his colleagues at the filling station receive orders from Juba Urban Water Corporation to increase traffic on water tankers.
So, by the way, the changes, the water that increased up to 7,000, I can think maybe it is due to the situation in South Sudan, because everything goes up to high price. So that's why the water has been increased up to be 7,000. At the moment, it was 3,500 per water tank. But in the middle, we were told to charge one trip at the rate of 7,000. So by then we follow up, because we don't have an order that we can even have the question that why do you charge one trip to be 7,000? Because for us, we are just normal workers inside the year.
This program reached out to South Sudan Urban Water Corporation for comments twice, but was told the managing director was on official trip to Kenya. When contacted today, Managing Director Yar Paul promised to comment on issues to do with the new traffic on Tuesday. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias, reporting from Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Senegal's ruling party's candidate, Amadou Ba, conceded defeat. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. In Senegal, the ruling party's candidate, Amadou Ba, conceded defeat the day after the presidential election. He called his opponent, Bassirou Diomaye Faye, released from prison a few days ago to congratulate him, even though the official results have not yet been announced. Abdourahmani Dia spoke to Saidi Kassama, a civil society activist and president of the Senegalese section of Amnesty International.
Saidi Kassama, how would you explain this result with opposition candidate Diomaye Faye being elected right at the first round?
I think there is a very strong will of the Senegalese people to make sure that at the end of the current term of the President Macky Sall, the 2nd of April, you have a president-elect to take over. They don't want a situation where we'll have an interim situation with the head, the Speaker of the Parliament, replacing Macky Sall and organizing the second round of this election. They want it that they didn't want this enormous situation to arrive. That's why they have mobilized, especially youth in the diaspora, to make sure that we have a president-elect, to take over the 2nd of April.
There has been, the country has been facing political violence these past 2 or 3 years, and several opposition leaders have been arrested. And at the end of the day, the people have spoken through a peaceful election. How would you explain that, and, you know, what should we take away from this process?
Yeah, before I talk about the people, I have to commend the Constitutional Council of Senegal. The Constitutional Council have really saved the Senegalese democracy by making sure that the electoral process is not has been brought back to into the rails. And the people of Senegal have spoken, and this is a very big lesson for the politicians, that no violence, no manipulation of the judiciary will prevail. So they have decided strongly to make sure that their voice is heard and that their will is the one that can elect the president. No violence, no manipulation of the institutions take over their will.
Finally, what would be the first order of business of the next president, Diomaye Faye?
I think we as a civil society have proposed a package of reforms that we need to undertake, and I think that these reforms need to be undertaken in the first 200 days of the regime, of the new regime. We need to reform the judiciary, make that it become more independent from the executive power. We need also to make sure that all the political office are filled based on competency, the ability of people to run the ministry, to run the public enterprises, not based on the political alliance or a political affiliation with the party in power. So we need to carry out this reform very quickly, and I think that in the coming days we'll make sure that we meet with the new president and put all these reforms on the table.
That's Saidi Kassama, a civil society activist and president of the Senegalese section of Amnesty International. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. U.S. President Joe Biden campaigned on his healthcare records this weekend, while his political rival Donald Trump had to focus on meeting a deadline to post a bond to a New York state court after losing a civil fraud case. Here is VOA's politics and policy reporter Veronica Baldras Iglesias with details.
After being found guilty of persistent fraud in his business practices, former President Donald Trump faced a Monday deadline to post a $454 million bond to a New York state court. Trump announced Friday via his Truth Social platform that he had the cash and repeated arguments he previously made in Palm Beach, Florida, against the civil fraud case.
This was a rigged trial by a crooked judge and a crooked attorney general. But they'd like to take the cash away so I can't use it on the campaign.
The question of whether the witch hunt narrative could help Trump politically was posed to Democratic Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, interviewed Sunday on CNN's State of the Union.
Has there ever been a president, Republican or Democrat, that has been subject to this level of criminal charges, indictments, and investigations? This is not about party. This is not about politics. This is about corruption and criminality.
Appearing on NBC's Meet the Press, the former chair of the Republican National Committee, Ronna McDaniel, commented on reports about a new joint fundraising committee between the RNC and the Trump campaign, and whether it's appropriate for Trump to ask donors to pay for his legal bills.
If they feel strongly to support his legal bills, then they have every right to do so. And I think he's being very open that they're helping with his legal bill.
Also in the race for a second term in the White House, U.S. President Joe Biden held a virtual rally Saturday, joined by his Democratic predecessor, Barack Obama, and House Speaker Emerita Nancy Pelosi. Biden focused on the topic of affordable health care.
This election is about two different visions of America, basically, is that. My vision, our vision about the future, where folks have a freedom and security of affordable health care, low prescription drug costs, and just a little more breathing room, as my dad would say.
Biden reassured voters he would preserve the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, and criticized Trump for vowing to dismantle it, even as around 20 million people have signed up for it this year alone. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Russia observed a day of mourning Sunday following a deadly attack on a music venue in Moscow suburb. Islamic State took credit for the assault that killed 137 people. VOA's Arish Arabsati brings us more.
Russian President Vladimir Putin lights a candle Sunday in memory of the victims of a mass killing at a music venue outside Moscow. Mourners lay flowers at a makeshift memorial at Crocus City Hall, the site of the deadliest attack in Russia in 20 years. Flags flew at half-staff at the Kremlin as Putin declared a day of mourning. It all started Friday at Crocus City Hall, a suburban Moscow music venue where gunmen stormed the building with automatic weapons and, according to Russian investigators, then used a flammable liquid to set the facility ablaze. Authorities say they've detained 11 people suspected in the attack, bringing them to the Russian Investigative Committee headquarters in Moscow. Little was left of Crocus City Hall by the time rescue workers began digging through debris. U.S. officials have said the Islamic State terror group's Afghan affiliate, known as Islamic State Khorasan, was behind the attack. But inside the Kremlin, officials began accusing Ukraine of involvement. Putin addressed the nation and, without evidence, said the attackers were moving towards Ukraine and that a passage was prepared for them on the Ukrainian side to cross the border. It is a claim refuted by U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris, who spoke with ABC News as carried on X, the platform formerly known as Twitter.
No, there is no whatsoever any evidence. And in fact, what we know to be the case is that ISIS-K is actually, by all accounts, responsible for what happened.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said, quote, Putin and other scumbags are just trying to find someone else to blame, adding that Russian forces invading his country could have stopped such a deadly attack if not preoccupied by war. Russian investigators say they found weapons and other evidence linked to the attackers as they begin the process of piecing together the night's events. And while much of the recent news outside Russian embassies and consulates focused on the still mysterious death of opposition leader Alexei Navalny, at the embassy in Serbia, people laid flowers, lit candles, and signed a book of condolences. The United Arab Emirates illuminated iconic buildings with the Russian flag in solidarity with the night's growing list of victims. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, March 25th, 2024. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Rob McLean, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
March 24th is World Tuberculosis Day. The observance is an opportunity to draw attention to one of the world's oldest and deadliest diseases. This year's theme is Yes, We Can End TB. It is the same theme as last year's, to emphasize a message of hope to those who continue to suffer with the disease. The date commemorates Dr. Robert Koch's 1882 discovery of the Mycobacterium tuberculosis, the bacterium that causes the disease. Dr. Koch's breakthrough opened the way towards diagnosing and curing TB, the first steps in a decades-long journey which culminated in the discovery and eventual mass production of antibiotics. Tuberculosis, or TB, has plagued humans for thousands of years. The bacterium that causes it is believed to have evolved along with people, and it is still evolving. The good news is that since the year 2000, 75 million lives have been saved, thanks to global efforts to end tuberculosis. The bad news is that as recently as 2022, 10.6 million people fell ill with the disease and 1.3 million died of it. Most TB deaths occur in the developing world, where the disease is closely linked to poverty. For one, impoverished people are more likely to live in overcrowded conditions with poor ventilation and lack proper hygiene and nutrition. These are the perfect conditions for the spread of this contagious illness. Second, the poor often lack access to diagnosis and care, or effective treatment may not be accessible or dependable. At the time of Dr. Koch's discovery of the tuberculosis bacterium, TB was one of the world's most feared diseases, reaching epidemic levels in Europe and the Americas, and causing one out of every seven deaths. Today, it is still the world's deadliest infectious disease. With treatment, the recovery rate stands at about 85%. Without treatment, TB kills half of its victims. The United States is a leader in the fight against TB. In 2023, USAID launched the Global Accelerator to End TB Plus initiative. One of the program's ambitious goals is to reach and deliver prevention and care services to 90% of people with TB. If countries that pledged funding for the programs follow through on their commitments, we may see the end of this killer disease by 2030.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.